Man, I'm 40.
This is John Sheezer. I'm
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholic. I gotta.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral. Okay.
It's that time of the week again, Sportsaholics, episode number 80. Can you believe it, Eric? We have made it to 80. A personal, it's a dear
Jerry
number
Rice,
to you.
Steve Largent, 80 episodes. Where does the time go, Steve?
You know what? It goes and it goes day after day after day. And then all of a sudden, bam, 80 shows up. And we're talking about one of the finest cornrows of all time is Jerry Rice, because if you guys...
Steve Largent had great cornrows. That is true. For a white guy, amazing that he pulled off cornrows. Very good. Oh, wait, that didn't happen.
No, I'm going with Rice. Jerry Rice is 80. Because Jerry, like, if you guys remember, he was one that, like, he went, I don't know, he went old school boxing with receding hairline. He went like the classic 35 rounds. He just would not go down. And as his hair kept going further and further back on his head, it was like watching a farmer trying to grow corn in Nebraska during the Great Depression. There was just Dust Bowl. It was just like the field was getting smaller and smaller every season until finally he just got rid of it. But amazing, amazing cornrows on Jerry Rice. That's why I don't remember his catches, his touchdowns, or his incredible Hall of Fame numbers. I remember the cornrows.
You started to write short stories. Did you take a short story writing class? You are with the verbal imagery and the Dust Bowl and Nebraska and the Depression and cornrows. Unbelievable.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Picture painting from the sheet.
Thank you. Because I mean, that's what I see when I see Jerry Rice. I mean, that's the vivid image in my head. I see him out on the beaches of Honolulu during all those Pro Bowls, you know, bouncing around between the Raiders and the Broncos and everywhere else in between at the end of his career, and the Dust Bowl in Nebraska.
Well, of course, you know, the greatest cornrows in NFL history have to go to Warren Sapp, who was probably at one time the scariest man in football, but because of his cornrows, looked like Rudy Huxtable from The Cosby Show. I would say that. I would also say, going back to Jerry, the more interesting things, of course, was Jerry actually wore two retired number 80s. One was his own number 80 that would get retired from San Francisco, and when he ended up with the Seahawks, he was evidently given permission to wear number 80, which had been previously retired, and it was the number of Steve Largent, you know, also one of those guys that who I loved on the field, but when he went into Congress, I think for maybe Oklahoma, turned out I didn't like his politics as much as I liked his pass-catching ability.
That which happens a lot, you know, you're like, wow, there's a reason why you only give 90-second interviews, because you don't really see eye-to-eye on your politics.
Right. Tom Osborne, the head coach of Nebraska, I respect. Tom Osborne, governor, congressman, whatever he turned out to be, not one of my favorite politicians. Okay. Now, and as always, you guys know that I fear one day Tom Brady will run to be governor, president of the United States. He might be the governor, president, you know, and I fear he'll be Republican. I do fear it.
Well, and, you know, for the Steve Largent was one of these, I don't know, you could argue him and Jerry Rice for the wide receivers of the 80s, kind of. I mean, he played college ball in Tulsa. That's where the Oklahoma tie-ins. Actually tried to run for governor of Oklahoma. I think the fact that he played on the West Coast in that liberal state of Washington for so long probably cost him a lot of votes in the western side of the state. they're like, he's up there way too long. There's no way he ain't got too much liberal running through them blood. But, Jersey retired by the by the Seahawks. Really was the face, the only person of the face of the Seahawks. I mean, can you think of any?
For a long time.
Yeah, I mean, really, because you guys out there, you.
I was just going to say you had Kurt Warner. You had the running back Kurt Warner, who then was blocked out. He was eclipsed by the white Kurt Warner, the quarterback, who was the greatest show on turf for the Rams and the Cardinals. I mean, it was a thing that the Seahawks did sort of have a franchise player problem, if you know what I mean, a recognizable franchise player. Like, this is our legend, this is our Hall of Famer. You know, people weren't dying to wear Jim Zorn throwback unis. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know what? It's hard for a franchise. I mean, winning is what creates that. I mean, you know, growing up, the Chiefs were piss awful, like throughout the late 70s, all throughout the 80s. You know, we get Derek Thomas in the 89 draft and then eventually Neil Smith in the 90 draft and, you know, assemble that Marty Schottenheimer, you know, amazing 3 yards per rush offense that we had. But we didn't have a face of the franchise except for it was always Len Dawson. And we were lucky because it was Super Bowl III.
Arguably won the. I mean, you know, people always like to give credit to Joe Namath and the New York Jets for you know, really balancing out the AFL with the NFL. But in some ways, you know, you have to give credit to your Chiefs because if the Chiefs hadn't, and Len Dawson hadn't won Super Bowl IV, that was when it said, "No, this is here to stay. This wasn't a fluke." This wasn't just the Jets, you know, anybody can win on any given Sunday, so that's why the Namath Jets beat the clearly superior Colts that had an aging and injured Unitas, and Earl Morrow was ineffective early, and, you know, in a certain game, you know, hey, you know, I would replay the perfect Patriots 18-1. I would play that game 100 more times, and I think the Patriots could win 90 times out of 100, but the fact is they didn't win on that day, and, you know, the Chiefs, you know, when it was, remember, you know, going into Super Bowl V, it's 2-2. It's, you know, Packers got two, you know, Chiefs and Jets got two. It's, you know, it's NFL 2, AFL 2, and it's on. And that's a real, you know, that's an interesting thing. And by that point, you also have, like, the Colts switching over to the AFC by Super Bowl 5 or 6. You know, it's an interesting time, and the Chiefs in some ways make the AFL, NFL merger happen. Or make it work, I should say.
And it's weird too, because then as you know, and then it's only if you remember. I mean, this is all happening in the late '60s, so really only 12 years later, the USFL almost tries to copy that exact same model and to try to build up their franchise. And there's a couple great documentaries. You know, obviously we'll recommend 30 for 30s all day, but the one about the '83 draft. Or 84 draft, I can't remember which
year. Quarterbacks?
Yeah, the quarterback
from,
draft.
From Marino to, I mean, it's the, Jim, from LA to Marino.
Yeah, and Jim Kelly, you know, going over there. Yep. And then, you know, you had
Reggie White, Herschel Walker,
Steve Young. You know, they threw a lot of money at it. And Donald Trump, of course, was involved with that. And then, you know, once it kind of went belly up. And
Heisman Trophy winners, after Heisman Trophy winner, Mike Rozier, he went over, Doug Flutie. Herschel Walker, as we said, I mean, it's, you know, there was a point where they made a threat. And
Reggie White.
And there was
No, I said Reggie White. I couldn't remember if you mentioned him or not, you know, but.
Yeah.
A lot of NFL Hall of Famers, and they just couldn't, you can't put money into fandom. You know, no amount of money is going to buy history. And to go back to the Steve Largent thing, you know, you need that player. That's what cements a franchise in the hearts and the soul of a community is having. I mean, as a Patriots fan, who do you have, really, before, you know, 1996?
No, it's very true. I mean, remember that the major Patriot throughout the 70s and early 80s is, you know, the face of the franchise, the Hall of Famer, is John Hog Hannah. He's an offensive guard of all things. Like when you're saying an offensive guard is the face of your franchise, or he's your lockdown Hall of Famer. You know, the living legend while he's playing is an offensive guard. You know, what are we saying?
Well, I mean, that's the classic. You know, he brings the lunch pail to work guy. He's the fans go to the stadium, they see their brother or their dad playing in a page. You know what I mean? He's like that kind of a guy, the face of the franchise, the face more of the face of the community of or New England. You know, but it was.
Oh, I mean, I remember going to games and watching Steve Grogan start, and by the first quarter, they wanted God, what's it, Matt Kavanaugh to come in, and by the second quarter they wanted third stringer Tom Owen to come in. I mean, you know, there was a dearth of talent. There was not. I mean, Stanley Morgan was a great wide receiver, but, you know, they had lost Darryl Stingley to being crippled in, like, 76 or 77. That was the, you know, that's the Jack Tatum hit that leaves Darryl Stingley paralyzed and in a wheelchair. There aren't that, you know, in some ways, it's the Patriots as an organization, as some of our longtime listeners might know, I grew up actually not a Patriots fan. I grew up a New York Jets fan because the Jets actually, I love the New York Stock Exchange. And the Patriots, the New England Patriots were also owned by a family called the Sullivan. And they had a terrible stadium, Schaefer Stadium. It was then called Schaefer Stadium. That's what Foxborough was Foxborough.
Now, was this the Sullivan family? Was this the Sullivan family that was bankrupted by Michael Jackson?
This is that family. The Michael Jackson Victory Tour basically forced the Patriots to be sold, and that's how they eventually ended up in Robert Kraft's hands. And Robert Kraft had actually been a fan who had season tickets and, you know, had, you know, seats in the end zone. That's part of his little story he loves to tell. But it's one of those things where I distinctly remember it was the 75th. It was 1993. It was the year that I moved out from my home and from New England after Syracuse. And it was season 75. It was the 75th NFL season where they were doing all those all time teams. And that was one of those things back when what's his name, the safety back from the Pittsburgh Steelers, Woodson. Rod Woodson.
Yes.
He was that guy that, you know, it's like he blew out his knee, but stayed on the roster and came back and played in the Super Bowl and pointed to his knee. And he was the great player. You know, he was like the next thing since a Deion Sanders or Ronnie Lott type.
Well,
of
and he brought player. That same, like, you know, steel curtain mindset from like the 70s that had been missing in Pittsburgh. Well, at that point, probably, you know, 10 years.
So it was one of those things where I distinctly remember being around 93, 94. The Patriots now were with, Robert Kraft, and they bring in Bill Parcells, and this is also Bledsoe. But when they got Bill Parcells, suddenly this was no longer a laughingstock organization. The Patriots were no longer a laughingstock organization. They got serious. They also, like, you know, things like, suddenly, like, Drew Bledsoe was appearing in at restaurants in nearby and doing, you know, they were doing publicity and promotion and community interaction in a way that the organization had never done before.
They were proud to have him. You know, they weren't hiding him or, you know, they didn't need to hide him. They knew that was the, I mean, was he the first overall pick or the second that year? Rick Meyer, I can't remember.
Right. It's that whole thing.
That 92 draft.
But they've gotten more serious. And I'm like, I'm having my first season away from home. They're wearing the throwback uniforms. There's a point where I'm getting homesick. And as shitty as Foxborough Stadium was, and the Patriots and their red uniforms, there was a pang of like, hey, that's where, you know, I went with my dad as a kid and saw games. And there was a point where, you know, it's like, and my love of the Jets was frustrated by the fact that they had fired Pete Carroll, who had gone 8-8. Only to hire former Philadelphia Eagle Rich Kotite, who proceeded to go 2-14, and there was a certain point where you're like, I'm done rooting for that organization. You know, it's like, and you know, it's like I'll ride with New England. And suddenly, instead of being my dad's rival, because it was always fun to fight with my dad about AFC East, and now that I was far away, it was more fun to be into the team.
It wasn't until, because I mean, I kind of found that, I mean, with as far as rooting for a perennial loser, you know, as a franchise, you know, as being a Royals fan, I did notice, like, as I moved to LA, I adopted the Dodgers, you know, because of their colors, essentially, and location to the stadium to where I live. But I did feel, I'm like, oh, you know what, the Royals aren't that bad. You know, the Patriots aren't that bad, you know. And then, lo and behold, they draft a cornerstone of a franchise, something to build on. And then as soon as you leave town, they kind of slowly start rebuilding. And then, you know, now you can kind of talk about the franchise with a little bit more pride when you're out at the Comedy Store, you know, signing up for open mics, you know, way back when.
Well, in some ways it was more about that I could talk to my dad about it, and we could have a good conversation, because it was interesting, and you're watching, you're you know, it's like, you know, I'll never, because I wasn't a, if you want to call me a bandwagon Patriot fan, that's fine, because I accept that. It was like, but I saw them building a bandwagon, and I decided to get on. Like, hey, can I get on? I see that you've built this bandwagon. And I'm like an early bandwagoner, and I'll cop to that all day, you know? But that's also a thing where, you know, hey, it's like I was all in, you know, I was in when the Parcell Bledsoe, you know, like, you know, that was a heartbreak. Whereas I don't have any, like, when it's like the Patriots losing to the Chicago Bears in 86, for example, I have no emotional attachment to it because my father and I were actually in a fight during the playoffs. Because I felt the Patriots had sort of jobbed the Jets earlier in the wild card, and I was not allowed. And because I was in such a fight, I actually was taken out of the house so I wouldn't ruin the Super Bowl for my father. I wasn't allowed to watch Super Bowl 20 in my home because I had been such a jerk to my dad.
That's hilarious. I think I'm going to parent that. I'm going to take your dad's parenting model and use it. Because I mean, it's only fair. It's like the last thing you want is your teenage son, you know, saying I told you so as your team is losing. I mean, I've heard stories of people that have been at your house during the Super Bowl and the way that you treat them now and the rules them regarding those certain people and when they can come over and when they can't. And I completely, it sounds like you adopted some of your dad's old habits as well.
Well, sure. Well, I mean, my mother's like, hey, you know, this is all your father's ever wanted was the Patriots to go to the Super Bowl, and you're really being a shitty kid and you're ruining it for him. I mean, she didn't say that exactly like that. She didn't call me a shitty kid. But she's like, you know, you're kind of ruining it for your father. It's like, you're really sucking the joy out of this for him. And, you know, that was one of those moments. It's one of those moments as a teenager when you realize that you're kind of an asshole. And you're like, yeah, I guess I have been sulking and self-centered and, you know, kind of an asshole.
Yep.
And I have a big asshole streak in me that I have to cope with. You know what I mean? And so I go to Assholes Anonymous meetings.
And if only you could have more of those as a teenager, that would be. But unfortunately, you probably only, in a normal teenage life, you know, you probably have three or four moments like that where you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm an asshole. That's right, I'm 15.
Yeah, everybody out there, everyone listening out there, be nice to your parents.
Yeah, they do love you.
Unless they're huge jerks and beat you and then fuck those people. But, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Take a moment to think about your parents, and you know, and give them a little love, and tell them to listen to Sportsaholics.
Yeah, and if you are getting beaten by your parents, that's kind of on you, man. I mean, you go on the internet, just email someone, and someone will be at your house to rescue you in 12 hours. I promise.
Well, so, if you're getting beaten by your parents, stop rooting for the wrong team. I mean, get on your dad's team. That's what I would say.
Yeah, or if you're, you know, or just put a hidden camera up and put that up on YouTube. You're gonna get a million hits.
Yeah.
You get a million hits instantly, you know, if that's what you're going for. But how was the show last night?
Wow, good show. The show up, go up, open mic. We had Mike Young stopped by. You know, Mike Young, a friend of the show from Detroit.
Actually,
and he comedy show regular who's also he's directing movies.
Yeah, he's doing a great job. His first movie is absolutely hysterical. I would recommend it. Just go on Netflix.
It has Michael Rappaport and John Stamos in it.
Great movie. And Brian Callen.
And his next movie is due out in about 4 months. It's called Stand Up Guy. So all you listeners out there, take a look for Mike Young and Stand Up Guy and IMDb him and check for the other movie that's already out. And I think you can watch it on demand, as the kids like to say.
It's worth
and
it.
Other
it
streaming
is.
Services.
Well, Brian Callen's in it. He kills it. It's his first movie's great, and that's why, I mean, less than 2 years later, he's got a second one. It was only his second movie directed, but, you know, very funny scripts as a comedian. You know, he's been doing it for years from Detroit originally. You know what? Let's try to get Mike on that before the movie comes out just to talk about it and promote it because he's a huge,
absolutely,
huge Red Wings fan. He just bleeds Detroit. Whatever color, whatever season that is, that's the color his blood's going to be.
And fascinating Hollywood stories. He's like he's one of those guys that lives the entourage type of lifestyle with all the people he knows. So we will have him back on the show. And then, you know, a couple other things. Matt Fullcharge Fultron came through. That was nice to see him. We had a couple of people from the Roast Battle working on stuff, a couple of new segments. We have a Yes All Women joke challenge where all the female performers get to go on and do one joke, see who gets stage time. which of course is also a shout out yesterday to the women's national team, bringing us our new Brandi Chastains, our new Mia Hamms. So yeah, it's like women. Yes, all women.
Yeah, I mean, what was it, like 580 minutes without giving up a goal? Something crazy. And then just the beatdown of Japan, something I'm sure probably brought tears to my grandfather's eyes. So congratulations, ladies, on a beatdown representing. I didn't realize this, that they didn't – I thought they just won it every time, but they hadn't won the World Cup in like 10 years or something.
It had been 15, but I got to be honest with you. I have a little bit of a – anybody who wants to call this a drought, I think that's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit precious of you. It's like there's nothing wrong with having not won since 1999 a World Cup. They do these every 4 years or so.
Was that not surprising to you? Because, I mean, this is a perfect example of propaganda right here. You just show a bunch of stuff to people that they don't really know a bunch about. Because, I mean, all you see on ESPN is the team winning, and they win enough of this other this other crap all the time. Like, I honestly assume that they had just won every year, that they were just waiting for the rest of the world to catch up to them in talent, you know, and you hear that a lot anyway, but that really did. 15 years, you said? That's crazy.
I mean, you're saying so they won in 1999, and it's 2015, and, you know, if you're even, think about it, if you had won in 1999 and you won this year, you'd be okay. I mean, it's not, and you're talking about the New York Rangers had a 40-year drought. That's a drought. You know, that, I mean, there's a serious thing where, you know, between 1986 and 2001, 2002, you know, Boston, none of their sports teams, like, had gotten to the championship round of their various, of the big four sports, you know. And so those are droughts, or, you know, it's like the, you know, Cleveland as a city is in a massive drought. But 16 years. I don't know.
That's more of a slump. Anytime you have multiple generations, of families without championship banners, that's when it's officially a drought. And look, for the white trash people, that doesn't count just because you have kids at 16. I'm talking like 40 years, you know, minimum.
Right. So, and then let me throw this at you, because everyone's so happy about it. But isn't it weird that, you know, for example, we have a WNBA.
We do.
But I don't know what a professional women's soccer league is in America. Do we have one?
Yeah.
I mean, where do these women go?
I'm gonna look it up right now.
I'm sure there is one. And we should learn more about professional women's soccer. Because I'm like, you know, where do all these great female American players go to play when they're done playing for the national team?
They go to the National Women's Soccer League is where they go. You can find that at the NWSLsoccer.com, where you will find teams such as the Boston Breakers, the Chicago Red Stars, the Houston Dash, FC Kansas City, Portland Thorns FC, Seattle Reign.
But don't you think there's a certain point? Okay, so there's a certain point where 25 million Americans supposedly watched on July 5th when the women won, and it was bigger than every sporting event. Like, it was bigger than game. It was bigger than the World Series games this year, or any of the NBA or the Stanley Cup Finals. But I think it's just below the Duke semifinal, like Wisconsin Duke game of the men's big dance. But there's a certain point where that's great, and we're all saying yes, all women today. But will we go, and will people go and support female soccer?
No, they won't. Look,
aside on the net, right?
It's the flavor of the week, okay? It was gay marriage last week. It's women's soccer this week. It's just the flavor of the week. It's just kind of like having, you know, the right purse if you're a girl, or the right pair of shoes if you're a guy. It's just like, if you don't know, if you're not excited about this, then you're not. There's a lot of pressure, I think. Pride, American pride-wise, you know, it's like, well, why not celebrate it? And soccer's done a good thing. I know in Kansas City, where they packed 10,000 people, where I watched the World Cup last year in the same area in Kansas City, same amount of people came down for the World Cup last year as the final for the women, you know, on Sunday, and everyone's just having a great time. So soccer, the spirit of soccer in the sense of from a fan standpoint, like they do in Europe and everywhere else, where it's a party and you're celebrating win or lose, preferably win. That's where soccer, I think, has succeeded, women or men's, because people in America don't know. So what's the difference? They don't know the sport, so they're not really concerned about the quality of play, because it's like, you know what? It looks this about the same between the women, maybe even sometimes better. The passing's maybe a little bit more crisp. Their ball handling is more, you know, sometimes a little bit better, you know. And so the sport visually isn't that much different in America between women and men. So I think that helps also for the casual fan. And plus, when you're drunk, you can't even tell the difference.
Well, I want to hear where you watched the game, but I watched the game at Jeff Ross had a pool party. And I got invited along to go to this pool party that also was like tie-dye T-shirts. But it turns out, as things do, a TV's on in the room, and a couple people end up wandering in. Eventually, more people wander in. But Ian Edwards is there, and he's a huge soccer fan and really knows the sport and all the players. I mean, and not just in the game that we're watching, but, you know, he could have a completely intelligent conversation with anyone on football, you know, soccer football.
Absolutely. Has a great soccer podcast. If you want to, listeners, go check it out. Ian Edwards, Soccer Rants, I believe is what it's called.
So he's great, and he's saying some very educated and informational things, and I'm watching it, and I'm picking up things as I go. I don't claim to have any special knowledge of the team or the players, aside from Hope Solo, and I believe that Hope Solo's leaked photos retrended again. For any of those who don't know, like, nude photos of Hope Solo leaked.
I actually leaked those.
Yeah. So, while many of us were looking at Hope Solo's vagina during the 60th minute of the game yesterday, there was an older gentleman at the party, and he was sitting there, and he was being very, very vocal, clearly just rooting for the women's team, very excited and very vocal, and, you know, and I'm not trying to step on his parade.
Not that it matters. What? So yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
But I'm watching this guy, you know, it seems like he's really enjoying it, so I sort of assume that, like Ian, he's a super fan. But as he continues to talk during the, you know, the 40 minutes we sit together, you start to realize that he actually knows absolutely nothing about the sport, and is almost like, he's just one of those people, like the Olympics. I don't know what the sport is, but America's playing, and we all have the day off together, and we're all drinking, so let's root USA, 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 and it's just a blind loyalty thing. And I found it very interesting that I thought some of the more vocal supporters in the room actually were the most ignorant of the sport and the players.
But they were probably the most... that had the highest alcohol content in their blood. Would you not agree? I'm serious. That's brilliant. I mean, soccer's on. Everyone get in a good mindset and have a good time. It's almost like background music to a barbecue.
Well, I mean, you know, it was 4th of July weekend, and you had the day off, and, you know, it was like, and remember, if they'd had the final actually on July 4th, the rating probably wasn't going to be as high, because more people would be literally on the beach or cooking out, whereas this was a Sunday off day where you could go to the beach, but, you know, there was a good chance that, you know, lots more TVs might be on in the afternoon.
Yeah, no. It's saying. Dude, it worked out perfectly. Yeah, because the 4th would have been nice, and that's a great story. But Sunday's the recovery day. No one's going anywhere. Everyone, if you're going anywhere, it's just down the block or to a good friend's house. And in this case, you know, Jeff Ross and all the other comics that were over there. And you just want to be around people you know. You don't want to entertain, you know, and have to put, like, your 4th of July face on. Just sip some beers and just relax, you know. And that, so that actually played in, I think, you know, because no one – it is women's soccer, and the ratings were huge, but no one's canceling their 4th of July events for a women's soccer game. I'm sorry. It's just not happening.
Right.
Oh, man, sorry. Guys, go – the Roastery. Sorry, I'm drinking some coffee right now from the Roastery in Kansas City. Great stuff. I have their coffee shipped out to my place. So go online and check out their coffee. It's amazing. Eric, you're not a coffee drinker, correct?
I don't drink the bitter bean, man. I believe that when you drink coffee, your soul dies. It's a fear I've had since I was a child.
Yeah, well, that's some weird Catholic shit. I don't know what that's about, but it's delicious coffee. And then while we're on sponsors, guys, go to onelovely.com. That's O-N-E, lovely.com. They've got a bunch of great baseball shirts, just a bunch of really cool one-offs, like unique designs that you're not going to find anywhere else. And currently 20% off if you go to onelovely, O-N-E, lovely.com. And we'll put a link up at John is here to that. And then also College Dose, company I've been working with. We've been shooting some videos that I will also link up on the website. And we had just announced we're going to do a 13-city fall tour heading to universities, UNLV, USC, Oregon, University of Missouri, Florida State, Wisconsin, Penn State. So you listeners out there, we're going to be coming to your neighborhood and just, pretty much just putting on a big, big party and going to implement, some comedy and just have a good time. So there'll be more information on that coming. But you can find that at collegedose.com. And Eric, let's take a quick break, all right?
Yeah.
All right, we'll be back right after this. Let me hear the whistle just two more times.
Hold on. Stay obsessed.
Gonna be
And we are back. And guys, real quick, that's the Expanders. They're a great band. They're on North American tour, and their new album just dropped 2 weeks ago. And good friends. We're going to hopefully talk to John Butcher of the Expanders, their lead guitar player, hopefully in the next couple weeks, and just have – he grew up in the Valley, 818 till he dies, and, you know, get his insights.
They are great. I have seen them in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Yeah, and you videotaped them at the Knitting Factory in Los Angeles over 7 years ago.
Oh, right. That's where I saw them. It was the Hillbenders. You said the Expanders. I was thinking the Hillbenders. The Hillbenders I saw – in Fort Collins. Anyway.
And they're doing great, man. They've been just packing out the tour. They just got back from their early summer tour. They went all over New England and just did a live show on Sirius Satellite Radio. Their album, it's, you know what? It's the Hillbenders are on the top of the Billboard bluegrass charts, and the Expanders are towards the top of the reggae Billboard charts. So guys, congratulations.
Chart toppers.
That's right, and amazing, talented people. That's the main thing.
That is part of that. Now, so, speaking of amazing, talented people, the voting is in. All-star game selections have been announced. Would you please update me on this vote royal movement that has swept the AL MVP all-star voting?
Well, it swept. I think what happens is they shot their load too early, if that makes sense. If we could have held off and maybe ambushed the voting a little bit closer, more to the deadline, there wouldn't have been that sense of urgency from everyone else. Josh Donaldson ends up getting the most votes all time, which is clearly you have an entire nation of Canada voting for him. So that, you know, that probably, Mayor Ford probably sent out an email that was like, hey, vote for Josh Donaldson. You know, to everybody. And so it was too much too soon. We couldn't overcome. I know Texas, they made a late run with Nelson Cruz to overtake Morales for the DH start. But look, I'm happy with Alex Gordon, Lorenzo Cain, Escobar, Perez. Those guys are all-stars anyway. So really, our voting did nothing. At the end of the day, those guys are legitimate all-stars. The only thing that happened was, is instead of winning by, you know, 50,000 votes or 100,000, it was more of a landslide. But Mike Trout came back, overtook Gordon, overtook Kane in the outfield. I think Gordon got...
So you ended up with four starters, correct? That's the number,
yeah,
four?
Yeah, in that four...
At one point
four,
you had eight?
Yeah.
But you're saying, hey, the Royals, these four Royals were representative of the AL World Series team of last year. So it's not ridiculous to have four representatives starting, like you would say for a Yankee or Red Sox team that had just played in the previous year's World Series. That would be no surprise.
Yeah, and I mean, the only, like, if Hosmer gets in, you could argue, just because he hasn't been really, like, killing the ball lately. Pujols has just been outstanding. I mean, he'll make it just, I mean, I think he's had 30 RBIs last month. I mean, just playing out of his mind. So that's actually really good to see. But, yeah, I mean, these guys are all-stars regardless. So all the voting, the vote royals really did nothing except for kind of anger, I think, Major League Baseball fans all around the country, and probably eventually change the way that the voting happens. And which was a great point, last week when we talked with our Padres insider, when he had a few ideas, which were, you can only vote with an MLB app while you're inside the limits, inside the ballpark, which I actually kind of like that idea, because
that's interesting.
That takes it back to the old, you have to be there to punch, you know, with the pencil, poke out whichever guys you want to vote for.
I punched the bejesus out of those.
And for those of you that aren't old enough to have done that, you know, you missed out, because that was a lot of fun. You would just sit there for innings, just voting hundreds of times over, which is the same thing everyone did online now. But if you implement some sort of restrictions that you have to actually be at the game, and maybe you can only vote, you can vote as much as you want while you're at the game, but maybe only once outside of a stadium, something like that, I think that's a great starting point. Yeah, and I think that's realistic, because then you're actually at the game, so that's proven to me that if you're taking time and money and effort to go to a game, then, you know, your vote does count.
I like that. No, I like that a lot. I hope that app gets to happen. A little bit of GPS, a little bit of apps. I like that. I like that a lot. I hope the Vote Royal internet surge puts their mind to stuff like that. I can't wait to see what this powerful internet voting bloc could do on any topic.
Well,
I just want to see if they can get moved to something else. Is there going to be some sort of 25th, 26th man vote? Do we have to get you guys on that?
I don't know if we're going to try to run for the Democratic card in the presidency, or if Salvi's thinking about running against Hillary. I know, you know, coming from, I think, the Dominican Republic, I think politically he's, you know, he's on the ground. You know, he knows what the people's rights are. So I think we can get enough people behind Salvi for a possible presidential run. But aside from that, I think Royals fans are done voting for a while until I forgot about the ESPYs. They are up for awards for ESPN. So Royals fans do go on ESPN and vote for the Royals in that sense. Sorry, I forgot.
See, there we go.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
So yeah, I was about to say, with everything that's been going on in the actual presidential campaign for 2016, the number of Republicans that are in, and the number of people in general, and some of the future people are still about to announce, especially recently with Donald Trump, I think that your vote Royal voter block could really do some damages for a certain player named George Brett if a certain player wanted to run for the Republican primary nomination 2016. You guys could vote Brett 2016, see how far that gets.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, he could become the face of adult diapers or something like that. I mean, I think he lost all of credibility once that shit story came out, you know, which obviously we sample in our intro. Food poisoning from the crabs. If you ever wondered, that's what the intro is George Brett. That's the clip from him talking about him shitting his pants. Food poisoning from the crabs. You know, great little restaurant, Kokomo's. First of all, if you have food poisoning, you shit your pants, it's not a great little restaurant. Don't recommend it to your friends. Can we agree on that, Eric?
I think absolutely. We're gonna do a little sportsaholic giveaway right now, cheese, because I don't know this. I have something to give away. I have a piece of the world's largest peanut butter cup that originally weighed 444 pounds. It was made on April 3rd, 2015 at the Candy Factory, the Candy Makers of the Stars. And this is, I have a certificate of authenticity right here and a big chunk of the world's largest peanut butter cup. Now, if any of the listeners right there can listen to the beginning of our show and our intro, whoever gets the most, whoever can identify all the sound clips from every episode they came from and gets verified by Cheese, I will happily mail you whatever I have left of the world's largest peanut butter cup.
So how big was your chunk of the 400? 5 pounds? You get a 7 pound chunk?
I have a very large chunk. It looks much like the chunk of kryptonite that Lex Luthor had in Superman the movie. It's a large chunk. And so anyway, you guys, tweet, Instagram, Facebook, or you can Gmail us possible answers at Gmail, sportsaholicswithanx@gmail. So if you can decipher all the sound clips that are in the Sportsaholics opening credits, and you could win a piece of the world's largest peanut butter cup.
A piece of history.
With authenticity included. So,
what, Eric, why don't you tweet more? Now. I'm kind of pissed, man. You need to be tweeting more. You got a lot of funny stuff to say. I've been on you about the blogging. You're an amazing writer.
I will do more. I'm going to do more. I'm going to be more.
Do you not understand? Do you not understand how it works? Or what's the deal? What's going on?
I'm an old man in a world gone mad. And I'm learning slowly. And I also, you know, it's sometimes a very busy time, and my writing time is, I was recently working with Leslie Jones. As you know, some of you know, I write for Leslie Jones, who's currently shooting Ghostbusters in Boston right now, and I work for her when she does her updates on Saturday Night Live. I go and open for her on the road. Recently opened up in Canada for her. And then on the day before the 4th of July, July 3rd, Leslie was asked to participate in a friend's wedding. It's a gay wedding that was going to be part of the David Turturro show Celebrations, which I believe is on WeTV. So I was out there and helped Leslie do her speech. We wrote a funny speech.
Oh, that's
so
great,
you guys,
man.
Can see when that comes out. And it was a great episode with David Turturro, an amazing wedding planner, party planner to the stars, and he has a couple different shows. My Fair Wedding was one of them, and now it's called Celebrations. And it was a very interesting event to go to. I don't know, you know, and also since it was being shot for a reality show, being part of a reality show while people are getting married is a weird, weird experience. But very poignant, especially after the Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Marriage is legal throughout the land, and so now it's just marriage. And people even correcting me around town. I'm like, oh, I went to a gay wedding. And they're like, you mean just a wedding?
Oh, yeah? Well, guess
what? What do you mean?
You know what? I think, okay, this is what I think with the gay wedding thing. Not like that ruling, I think, is going to affect marijuana nationally. Because in my view, it's like, okay, the ruling came down. There was a couple that was from Ohio, and the husband was ill with ALS, I believe, Lou Gehrig's disease.
Yeah.
And so they fly to Maryland. They land on the tarmac. A preacher comes on. They get married. They fly back to Ohio as a married couple. Ohio doesn't recognize gay marriage. Husband passes away, and they refuse to put the other husband's name on the death certificate. So the ruling then, nationally, now every state has to recognize gay marriage. That's as simple as it can be broken down, correct?
Sure.
Okay. So
I think that's great. Welcome, by the way, welcome to a very special episode of Wahaholics.
And so,
God, Jesus.
Yeah. So
Supreme Court of Holics. Wow, look at you. It's like a paper chase.
And so, my feeling is, so in California, Colorado, Wisconsin, Montana, I believe New Hampshire, Vermont, I believe even Illinois, you carry a card that says I can legally smoke marijuana medicinally, or in some states recreationally. Some states you don't even need a card.
I just went to the doctor and renewed my medical marijuana recommendation just last week.
And so with this recent ruling mandating that every state has to acknowledge these laws, that at that point were, I think, 37 states legally acknowledged gay marriage. Before the ruling, what's to say a lawyer couldn't take that same argument and apply it towards medical marijuana?
Well, you're saying that is true. You're saying I have a medical right to marijuana in this state, and due to a medical reason. And if when I fly to Boston, or if I fly to a state that's not as friendly, that's not Colorado, it's like my medical rights seem to change as soon as I pass state lines. I definitely hear that.
Which is the same thing, the same argument they were using in acknowledgement of this gay marriage certificate that wasn't being acknowledged in Ohio. Because I know if you were to go to Ohio, your medical card's not being acknowledged.
I have to tell you, I was only surprised that marijuana went legal in the way it did. It was an interesting evolution since California originally passed medical marijuana back in like 96, I want to say, and then how it eventually became the dispensaries, and then it blossomed that way. I've always been very surprised, because I remember during the 90s being here in Los Angeles as they were phasing smoking out of all buildings, especially bars, and that was like, there was a quick change of like, hey, you're in your 20s and you were, and a bar was a smoky place, and you would come home and your clothes would stink of smoke, and now you don't have
as a non-smoker, where I grew up, going to smoky bars and then coming home and everything just still smelled the same.
Oh, well, you're wrong. If your bar was full of smokers, your clothes still smell the smoke. And you
no, I know, because I was one of the smokers adding to the problem. So for me, it was more it was an inconvenience. For you, a much-needed, luxury.
Right, but I remember in the early 90s thinking very clearly and openly, I remember saying, now wrongly, that I was like, I really thought that, legalizing marijuana was going to become a dicier or more troubling issue because, tobacco smoke is going out. But it's very interesting how, the marijuana, medical marijuana moved around that. And in some ways, it's like, think about how tobacco is really shunned almost everywhere, but in a weird way, Colorado and Washington are celebrating recreational recreational smoking. It's not just smoking, because you can vaporize or edibles, and I understand
that. And that's a whole other thing.
So much of it so much of it is still like, and there's so many interesting studies coming out about how marijuana smoke doesn't seem to interact with your lungs in a carcinogenic way in the same way that tobacco and whatever additives the cigarette
comes down to the additives. And then you're going to see arguments, you know, where you're going to find marijuana grown synthetically almost with all these added chemicals and steroids, you know, to boost
I often do worry that at a certain point, which I think we will see in our lifetime, that when marijuana gets completely legalized everywhere, and that corporate entities like a Philip Morris or the tobacco companies can just get into it, that I fear corporate marijuana cigarettes. I fear what corporate America will do and add to marijuana.
I mean, just turn on MSNBC or Vice, or I mean, there's countless documentaries, 2020 Primetime Live. The corporations exist already. The only difference is they haven't been acquired by Philip Morris yet, or maybe they have.
No, I understand that. What I'm saying is, because I already understand that, because my mind was blown about 2 years ago when my parents, who never have smoked, neither one of my parents have ever smoked marijuana, and my mother's a police officer, and my dad was a teacher, and so they've always kept it very much at an arm's length, and, you know, in some ways it's always like, you know, it's always going to be a criminal thing, or it's always going to be a drug. But they now, since they are now retirees, they're like looking very seriously at marijuana companies as a financial investment, because you can see that coming. And when you're having conversations with your parents about the financial benefits of marijuana, that's when you realize they support you in dealing drugs. What? No, I don't know.
No, it's funny though, because it's like, that's America, you know, down to its fullest. You know, it's like, okay, you've got these, you know, very, you know, staunch, good old, you know, white collar, picket fence, whatever you want to say, good Americans that have worked hard their entire lives, and now they're, it's almost ironic that now, for security and safety purposes, financially, it might be in their best interest to invest in a drug company that grows weed. You know, maybe not, what's the difference between, like, you know, pharma tech and, you know, green tech? Right. You know, it's the same company now, you know, now that it's become.
Right. And they could have always invested in Budweiser or Jim Beam or Jack Daniels. They could have, and you know, in some ways, you could just say that it's like, you know, alcohol is much worse of a drug than marijuana is, but one was demonized and one wasn't.
Now it's turned into investaholics.
What?
That's crazy, man. Did they end up buying some stock?
I have no comment on that. I'm gonna leave that a financial mystery to our listeners.
Nice.
As it's not my finances, and it's none of their business, because it's not even my business. So I'll leave it their business.
That's fair. Hey, you think you're going to be able to make it down next week for Comic-Con, or do you give it any thought at all?
Right, you have big Comic-Con down in San Diego. Get your cosplay ready, everybody. I'm sort of hoping somebody might dress as the new female Ghostbusters down there.
Yeah,
I've already seen the pictures of stuff that's on. I've seen some stuff from our friend Leslie Jones on set that isn't released, and it's some cool stuff. It's some cool stuff.
How is she doing? I texted her a couple weeks ago to see if she was going to be in Southern California, and she was like, "I'm busier than ever." But I mean,
she's in New York right now with Kate McKinnon, who's also on Saturday Night Live, and Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig. They are the new Ghostbusters. They're doing a new script. It's not a remake of the original Ghostbusters. They're all new characters, and there are also going to be cameo appearances by Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd playing the original Ghostbuster characters. They are also playing different characters. Ernie Hudson is also making an appearance. And it's being directed by Paul Feig, who did a lot of the Melissa McCarthy, like Heat and Spy, the recent Spy that came out. And he seems to be just It's just growing great guns, and Leslie is finding herself overwhelmed by fans and finding a lot of people showing up at her hotel that want to have pictures printed up of her as a Black Annie, which is one of the sketches she did last fall on Saturday Night Live. And it's an interesting experience.
That's crazy.
It's always been...
No, it's like that's crazy. I mean, and she's bigger than life, and so I'm sure the fans love it when they meet her.
Yeah, it's really something. And now she's having weird life experiences where it's not like she just meets Tom Hanks. She meets Tom Hanks, who's with his wife, actress Rita Wilson, and she walks into a room and they're both there. And it's not that she just meets them; they know her and know who she is, and like. And they say, like, oh, we were talking about you the other day. And it's like, okay, Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson just have conversations about Leslie Jones when she's not around? Interesting. It's an interesting
nice.
Time.
You know what, Eric, I'm going to take the second. We're going to go into a quick clip from when we had Leslie on a few years ago, talk about growing up playing basketball. We'll just drop a quick old, like, 5-10-minute sample.
Great.
It was like at 2 in the morning.
I've done that. Way back in the day, if you didn't get picked, you went on at the end of the show. You went on like because there was a hard Mitzi saw showcases at 9. If they hadn't gone through the open micers, they said you hung out to the end of the night. I used to go up at 1:45.
And I did that. And there was a crowd. There was a crowd. Okay. And at the time, and I remember that I was so excited and Richard was excited. So we went to the diner that I now know that is Mel's Diner.
It was Ben Frank's then.
Yes.
Yep.
But it looks the same. So we went and we sat in there and we ate and stuff and hung out and was like, I was so excited. And he was like, you know your jokes. And I kept reading my jokes And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to be a comedian. This is like the biggest club in Hollywood. I'm going to be a fucking comedian. Yeah. So it was time for me to go up. And I wish I knew this girl's name because to this day I would fucking write her because she was the host. And it was a blonde chick. And, you know, she introduced me. She gave me love. She gave me so much love. And I came up. I was like, this blonde bitch. The whole crowd was like.
Yeah, you didn't go with the energy right away. You learned the first lesson of going with energy. And
like,
going...
how you going to call her a blonde bitch and we don't even fucking know you? We know this bitch. And as soon as I heard the silence, because I'm a new Jack.
Yep.
I don't know how to go right into killer. I'm a new Jack.
Right.
So I'm sitting there and I heard silence. I was like, and literally every joke that I had, it was posted. It seemed like the punchlines literally started mixing themselves up. I was doing punchlines from one joke to the other joke.
What a perfect way to describe that. That is.
All I kept saying was, and shit, motherfucker. and shit, motherfucker. Motherfucker, motherfucker, and shit.
My aunt, who's a nun, my aunt, my godmother, who's a nun who I love, who took me to my first Red Sox game. She took me to all my Red Sox games. She comes one night to the open mic at the Comedy Store. She's like, well, it's very nice, Eric. I mean, she's a really intelligent woman, too. It's not like she's not, even though she's a nun, she's not closed-minded or anything like that. She's not a stereotype. She's like, well, Eric, I thought you were good, but I think that if the words shit, bitch, and fuck were taken away, that would be everyone else's act. It's like, yeah, in the open mic, if they can't say bitch, shit, and fuck.
I'm telling you, I was ass shit. So I remember thinking, no one's laughing. I'm talking about. The only person that's laughing is Richard in the back. And Richard's not laughing with me. He's laughing at me.
Because
he probably wanted me to fail, you fuck. Yeah, this a teacher. Now she'll go home and have a baby. Fucking bitch. Fuck you, motherfucker. All
right, leave it alone.
So anyway, so I started...
Getting better.
I was terrible. So I ended the set. Yeah. I gave the mic back to the girl. I walked off the stage, and you know, right there where you walk into the original room, you know where the waitresses be?
Yeah.
Sure.
I threw up all right there.
You went up at the Comedy Store, and then you threw up your very first night. I've known you this long. You never told me that story. You have never, ever
and
told me.
Everybody
that
heard me because it was like an ugly throw up. It was
Yeah, because you had all that diner food in your belly.
And Richard was like, what's wrong? What's wrong? I was like, all right there. All right there. And the host saw me throw up. She was like, yeah, that bitch throwing off the badass jokes. She was like, and shit, motherfucker. And shit, The crowd died.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, that's the end of my career. You know, that's all I kept thinking. I was just like, you know, throwing. So I went to the bathroom. I cleaned myself up. And I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, what are you going to do?
Right.
What are you going to do? So I remember coming outside.
By the way, this is exactly how 8 Mile started.
Me and Eminem can relate. I came out the bathroom and there was this dude there that had I want to say it's the Roxy now. Yeah. It was a little diner and it's a small parking lot. They had a piano in the corner and there's a bar. It's a very small room. And this guy, he came, he had a gray bob. He had not a gray bob, but it was the bombest bob. You knew he was gay, but it was a bob.
Was it Rodney Bingenheimer?
I don't fucking know who this guy was, but this guy came up to me and he was like, you got great stage presence. He was like, that was some bullshit. Don't worry about it. He was like, I could tell you're new. He was like, I like
fairy godmother.
He was like, I like new comics. He was like, I like new comics. Uh-huh. He was like, come down the street. I do a really, really late show and I let new comics go up. He was like, you don't have to go up. He was like, you could just watch. You could just watch the comics. So, and Richard was with me. He was like, I'll treat you drinks and stuff. And Richard was like, yeah, let's do it. Fuck it. You know, right. We're here. So we went down the street and it was like, whoa, like crazy. Cause there was a comic that was up doing Richard Pryor. Like he was imitating Richard and he was I still don't know.
Right.
I don't think I've ever seen these people again.
Yeah.
Which kills me because it's like, it seemed like they still should be around. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. But this look, and he was younger than me. He was like 18. And he was doing Richard Pryor. He was imitating. I was like, damn, this motherfucker got Richard Pryor down. Like, and the crowd was like it was like a speakeasy like type shit. It was just awesome. People were smoking cigarettes and, you know, and just and it made me go, I want to be a comedian. I want to be a comedian. I want this. This is what I fit here.
Wow.
You know, I fit here. And what I decided, I said, okay, let me go up again.
Right.
Let me go up again. Let me rehearse some more. Let me go up again. And this story was.
It's crazy to think that was already that long ago, but I mean, Leslie's always, you know.
She just told me that her old coach just got in touch with her.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Because that's where it all started. Colorado State, 1988. I think her friend signed her up for the open mic, something like that.
Well, I should also, that is true. I'll also give a shout out to Chapman. She originally met her coach that got her the scholarship at Chapman, as she said, and then. And then she got put into a funniest person contest in Fort Collins, a great little town, which actually was that Walt Disney used to base Main Street on, Fort Collins, Colorado.
Really?
And that's true. And
first studio was in Kansas City.
And Leslie Jones, 27 years later, is now trending on Saturday Night Live.
That's awesome. That's great.
There's also a new documentary you guys should check out that she has a great scene in. It's called Live from New York. It's about, you know, the 40-year history of Saturday Night Live. They just went through their 40th season. And one of the clips they include in the movie is sort of behind the scenes of Leslie's very first appearance on Saturday Night Live when she did her slave routine, very first weekend update.
That's
awesome.
And you
actually get to see her just coming off stage.
Is that Can a Bitch Get a Beef Bowl?
Yeah. No, it isn't.
No. Oh, okay. No. Oh, that's the one that got all the controversy because she said like Mandingo and like it was the one about the African supermodel.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It is Bitch Get a Beef Bowl.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
That is the end.
Nice. Yeah, I'm thinking
that
of
is the end.
Hell yeah. That's nice.
That is the end.
Well, Eric, anything you want to throw in before we wrap up?
Guys, all right, let's give out some plugs. Guys, check out the Clean Ed, the Ed and Clee podcast. You can also follow that on Facebook. Check out my show, The Show Up, Go Up. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Periscope. And if you're not in town, if you're in Hollywood, it's every Sunday night, 11 to 1. In the belly room.
If you got any questions, just call up the comedy store. There's someone working the phones, you know, 10 to midnight East or West Coast time, 7 days a week. So you can call up, go to the website, get more information on that. I saw that they put a link up there, which is great. And then, if you're ever around Ed or Clay, you can just do an interview and we can plug it in.
Yeah, we'll do a little crossover thing. I have to record something for them real soon. And here's the other thing I wanted to say. You know, one of our good friends of the show, Brian Moses, runs a great show every Tuesday night in the same belly room around 10:30. It's the roast battle. We've talked about it on the show before. But she's, I don't know if you this guys, anyone, any of our listeners who are in Montreal, Canada, Jeff Ross and Brian Moses and many of the people from Roast Battle will be up there doing what Jeff Ross presents, a Roast Masters Invitational, where various comics will be battling each other roast style, and I think there might be a 16 comic tournament to come up with an eventual
that's awesome.
Overall Roast Master, and that's going to be happening over 5 days at the Just for Laughs in Montreal. So, guys, anyone who's up in Montreal going to Just for Laughs, I believe it's July 21st through the 25th, and give that a look.
Nice, yeah.
Or if you can follow those guys on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and the Periscopes around 11:30 Pacific Standard Time, Periscope Roast Battle.
Nice, and I'm sure they're getting thousands of. And that's the thing, if you live in New England, it's just, you know, it's like a 5-hour drive to Montreal, something like that. You know, think about the Just for Laughs Festival as an option for entertainment, because you go one stop shop.
I am most likely going to be there one of the nights, but I don't know which one yet.
Nice. We'll have to, you know, have you do some corresponding.
I got that passport now, Sheez. I can travel the world.
Oh, congratulations. Congratulations. And again, guys, thanks for listening. Continued new listeners all over the world. South Korea representing a bunch of hits from there last week. So thanks for listening there, guys, and spreading the word. Obviously, you can find us on Stitcher, iTunes. Go ahead and leave a review. That would be great. Visit onelovely.com, O-N-E, lovely.com. Pick up some one-off shirts, some great baseball shirts, some really funny stuff. They got some skateboard decks. They got a little bit of everything. And then, of course, collegedose.com. That's collegedose.com. Go to find some entertainment, funny videos, some stuff I've shot recently, that sort of thing. But guys, you're awesome. Thanks for listening, and stay obsessed. Let me hear that. Let me hear that horn.
Thank you very much, Colin. Hello, everybody. I wanted to come out here tonight and congratulate Lupita on winning People's Most Beautiful Person, and I agree that she is very beautiful. But for me, personally, I'm waiting for them to put out the most useful list. You know what I'm saying? Because that's where I'm going to shine.
Most useful?
That's what I said, you delectable Caucasian. Let me ask you a question. If you walked in a club and you saw me and Lupita standing at the bar, who would you pick?
Wow.
Yeah, I know. You would pick Lupita.
Wow.
But let me ask you this. If you was in the parking lot, and three Crips is about to whoop your ass, who you gonna pick then?
I would pick you.
You're damn right you would. And that's my point. The way we view black beauty has changed. Look at me, see, I'm single right now. But back in the slave days, I would have never been single. I'm 6 feet tall and I'm strong, Colin, strong! I mean, look at me, I'm a Mandingo!
Leslie, you're not saying you'd rather be a slave,
no,
right?
No, that is not what I'm saying. I do not want to be a slave. Hell, I don't like working for you white people right now, and y'all pay me. I'm just saying that back in the slave days, my love life would have been way better. Master would have hooked me up with the best brother on the plantation. And every 9 months, I'd be in the corner having a super baby. Every 9 months, I'd just be in the corner just popping them out, just Shaq, Kobe, LeBron, Kimbo Slice,
Sinbad.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying I would be the number one slave draft pick.
all of the plantations would want me. I'd be on television like LeBron announcing which plantation I was going to go to. I would be like, I'd like to take my talents to South Carolina. I do believe that there's going to be a lot of opportunities there for me. Now, I can't even get a brother to take me out for a cheap dinner. I mean, damn, can a bitch get a beef bowl? Can a bitch get a beef bowl?